From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the last in a series of weekly discussions with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly about her weekly column there under the banner Freedom Rider. Although her schedule no longer allows her to be a weekly contributor here, we do look forward to working with her as often as possible in the future. Her column this week is simply entitled, Leave North Korea Alone.
Yes. Right before, around the 4th of July, North Korea conducted more missile tests, which is not anything particularly worthy of note. It's something that nations do. They have weapons, they test weapons, they test new weapons. But from the corporate media response, one would have thought that this was a great danger. There were all these articles about what to do about North Korea. How does the United States stop them? Should there be surgical strikes against North Korea? North Korean missiles could reach Alaska. North Korean missiles could reach California, and so on and so on. And the reality is there's nothing to do about North Korea. North Korea has a right to have weapons. Every country does. And considering the aggression that America carries out against weaker nations, the North Koreans would be foolish if they didn't test their weapons. Mm. So it's important for people not to be taken in by the scaremongering and this belief that some countries have a right to have weapons and some do not have a right to have weapons. And North Korea is on the doesn't have any rights list, according to American pop politicians right. and the corporate media. But it's very, very dangerous to confront a country that has this capability for no reason. And so that's why I felt the need to just to first to keep that title simple, leave North Korea alone. Right. And it's something that people need to talk about and stop allowing what we're told about this country, which isn't very much, frankly. I don't think I'm not very knowledgeable about North Korea, but I do know and I do believe in non-interference, that the United States doesn't have the right to dictate to other countries or interfere in their affairs.
Yeah, the teaser to the article starts out invoking Dred Scott, as in Dred Scott v. Sanford, that other nations have no rights that the United States is bound to respect. And, of course, that comes from the Dred Scott decision that said that there were no rights vested in black people that white people had to respect. And they call North Korea a rogue nation. Now, you know, you talk about testing weapons. If you talk to some of the folks in the Marshall Islands, like, say, at Bikini Atoll, for example, or as they put in Rocky and Bullwinkle, nothing atoll, because that's what's left of it. They bomb the hell out of it with nuclear weapons. This is the United States from July 1st of 46 until July 22nd of 58. And, in fact, if you actually Google Bikini Atoll tests, the first hit is atomic tests at Bikini Islands. See if you qualify for $75,000 as an atomic veteran. They poisoned the U.S. military aside from that place. And, of course, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The United States, the only country that's done this, and we have the presumptive right to continue to do it and to decide who doesn't.
Yes, it's you know, it's something that has been going on for decades. That the first of all, after the United States developed atomic weapons, tried to keep this secret, and there's no secret. All you need are scientists with enough right. time and enough money, and any country can eventually develop atomic weapons. So,
and an inkling to blow stuff up. You have to have that too, like a hot desire to blow things up.
Well, that too. Yes, you do. But so when the Soviets got the atomic weapon, it obviously was because of spies, and they had stolen the secret of nuclear fission, which is not a secret at all.
Yeah, right. The sun has it. The sun has it, okay?
Yes, that's true. So for many years, we've seen this play out, and Iran has been targeted for decades, targeted with sanctions, and they essentially had to give up their ability to even had to cripple their ability to develop nuclear power,
right,
which was their goal all along, to ease their dependence on exports. And so the United States led this effort for many years, destroying the Iranian economy, causing great suffering in that nation, and in part because Israel didn't want anybody else in that region to have nuclear capabilities. Israel has quite a nuclear arsenal. Nobody knows how big it is.
Yeah, they say 200 or more. They say that, you know, the consensus in the media is 200 plus. So,
yeah, but we know they have it. They put a man in jail for many years because he finally revealed what everybody knew to be true, but they haven't signed any treaties. Israel gets more money from the U.S. than anybody else. So it all depends on who your friends are. Yep. And so here we are in the 21st century, 40 years after Nixon went to China. And the United States has designates North Korea an enemy that has to be controlled, that can't determine its own fate. And the Koreans are, whatever else they are, they're not stupid. They see what happened to Iraq. They see what happened to Libya. They see what happens to countries that can't defend themselves. So, of course, they want to have an arsenal of conventional and nuclear weapons. And it's a sad commentary that it's prudent for them to do so. If in my ideal world, there would be a great de-escalation of weaponry of all kinds. But as long as the United States continues to behave in this manner, North Korea can't act in any other way.
And North Korea has a different experience set, a much richer experience set in advance of the United States invading than Iraq, say, or Afghanistan or Libya. You know, those places, they were sanctioned, and, you know, they saw, you know, various attacks, like the bombing of Gaddafi's compound by Reagan, for example, in the 80s, things like that, occasional flare-ups. But, you know, North Korea was, quote-unquote, North Korea. The DPRK was leveled by the United States 65 years ago, leveled to the point where there were no more targets, and that's what they told the superiors from the U.S. Air Force. There's nothing left to bomb in the country. They've got that. They've been at a state of war since with the United States, legally, technically, and then the sanctions that are unparalleled except for and perhaps even including Cuba since the early 1990s. And, of course, since then also, they get to see twice a year an actual invasion that halts at the border. Is it going to do that again this time? Twice a year, these war games that they talk about are essentially invasions that stop at the border and never fire the shots across. So that's their experience set going into it. They might have a case for why they need to have something to defend themselves.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, all these years after the Cold War allegedly ended, and we have to say allegedly because clearly it didn't.
Really?
The United States still treats North Korea as an enemy, practices these war games with South Korea. The United States has its own missile system, the THAAD missile system, that it's developing now, and North Korea is a target.
Yep.
But we are never told by our press, we're never told by our politicians that we're never ever given information about any place the United States decides is an enemy. And we're told always the worst case scenario, constant justifications for our own country's aggression, when it's really very simple. The United States can engage with North Korea. Why not have talks? Why not have limits on weapons? So here we are all these years after Nixon started detente with China, with the Soviet Union. It looks like to me that we're going backwards. But you see how the United States behaves. One of the problems in U.S.-Russia relations is that George W. Bush just unilaterally withdrew the United States from a missile treaty with Russia.
Right.
I mean, that's the sort of thing that the United States does on its own, and then points a finger and condemns another country that's going its own way. The United States will do that all the time when it's considered advantageous. So I think once again we see that it's best to just assume that our country is, our government is lying to us. I think that's definitely true here with North Korea. There's no need for panic. I was pleased actually to see in interviews with people in Alaska, were they concerned about missiles reaching Alaska from Korea, and they were more concerned about a series of bear attacks than they were about North Korea. I was actually,
and with good cause. Yeah, right.
Yes, yes. I mean, bears are a greater risk to life in Alaska than North Korean missiles. So I was happy to see that people aren't buying into this manufactured hysteria.
And then, of course, you know, while we're talking about testing missile systems, Russia and China have both said that the installation of this THAAD system in South Korea are okay, that they considered themselves the targets of this, and that North Korea is simply a straw man in that discussion. And so the response from the United States was to test test yesterday of the THAAD system in Alaska. They just successfully shot down a missile from there. That was seen, I'm certain, in Beijing and Moscow as it was intended.
Yes, well, we need a little geography lesson. If one looks at a map of the Korean Peninsula, Korea, we know, borders China. It also borders the far east of Russia.
That's right.
If you look at Vladivostok, it's close to China and Korea. So they are wise to see this as a threat directed against them as well. The pivot to Asia, the United States is trying to uphold this creaky, rotten system, is becoming more and more aggressive. And so Russia and China are right to see this as a threat to them as well. China is rhetorically blamed for anything that DPRK does. Can't the Chinese control them? Can't the Chinese make them stop? And no, they can't. It's not a vassal. Yes, they're allies, but it's not a vassal state that takes orders from China either. And China has its own interests, and they perhaps aren't interested in telling North Korea what to do. I'm sure it's very complicated. But once again, we see other countries being treated as almost like children, and being told what to do by the adults. Korea, you can't have weapons. China, can't you control Korea because we tell you to? And when the way out of all of these complicated issues is engagement and discussion. So I think we have to be, Americans have to be careful. And we're always told something negative about North Korea. First, it was they're all starving to death. No, they're not starving to death anymore. Now they have missiles. Kim Jong-un is a crazy man. You know, why is Dennis Rodman over there? They hacked Sony. They hacked, there was a worldwide malware attack a few weeks ago. And without any evidence whatsoever, the same press who told us that the Koreans hacked the Sony Corporation just said, it's Korea. Well, first it was Russia, then it was Korea. And so I guess it depends on what's happening that particular day, what the media tell us. But I don't believe either of those scenarios in any case. So we have to be very careful and really parse what we're being told. I think it's best to assume that we're not being told the truth ever, especially when it's any information we're given about a country that our government says is a hostile state.
You know, the last vote that they had on a Korea sanctions bill in the House in May was 419 in favor to 1 against. And the only member to vote against it, and this is, again, he's done this in a number of votes now, towards Russia also, Thomas Massie, who's a Republican from Kentucky. He's the only one that said no. Otherwise, 419 people in the House voted in favor of it, and I assume, what do they got, 435 members?
Yeah, 435.
435, so that many missed, abstained or were absent or whatever. That's, so, 15 of them. Otherwise, you know, that's a huge lopsided. It's like the Gulf of Tonkin kind of unanimity, just about.
Well, you know, even lest we forget, the vote to declare war on Japan, which was the last declared war, by the way, right. In December of 1941, yep. There were more members of Congress who voted against declaring war than that.
Right.
I mean, now the fact that you have these unanimous votes supporting aggression against another against other countries is very, very telling. But if only one person voted against, that means every Democrat voted along with Republicans.
Right. That's right.
And it proves once again that we have a war party. Some are Republicans, some are Democrats, but they are all happy to be members of the war party and to support efforts that back America being the hegemon in the world and controlling other countries. So this is where we are, where the Democratic, when it comes to foreign policy, there's very little difference between Democrats and Republicans. So those of us who are anti-war, those of us who are opposed to American interventions, we know that we cannot be Democrats or Republicans. And this is just one more example that proves that.
You know, and you mentioned also that the media here, you know, is such a huge problem. And I think one of the things that just, you know, betrays that fact facially, you never hear a discussion at all about the fundamental issue of the U.S. war games, which Korea said, hey, you stop mock invading us twice a year and we'll stop testing weapons.
It seems very logical to me, but you're right. We are never given even the smallest bit of information about any country that we're told is our enemy. We are never given their point of view. We are people, scholars, experts who could explain these situations are written off. They don't get an op-ed in the New York Times or the Washington Post. The journalists just repeat whatever the White House or the State Department or the Defense Department say. North Korea's evil, North Korea's evil, North Korea's evil. They can't be trusted. They can't have missiles. But no one ever being given an opportunity to say, wait a second, here's their point of view. Not even a point counterpoint thing where right. one person, you know, where you hear more than one opinion. We have manufactured consent in this country. And I find it interesting that Americans are so convinced that they have a free press, but we don't. We have a press that takes its orders from the rest of the elites.
You know, here's one that I just saw in the last few days, and I heard something on Pacifica yesterday with Mitch Jeserich. He interviewed one of the authors of this. But there's a paper that was released, you know, a study, a scientific study, the title of it, Battlefield Casualties and Ballot Box Defeat. Did the Bush-Obama Wars Cost Clinton the White House? And it's by Douglas L. Kreiner, K-R-I-N-E-R, and Francis, the male form, F-R-A-N-C-I-S. Initial X as in Xavier Shen. Here's a tease from the abstract. The statistical model suggests that if three states key to Trump's victory, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, had suffered even modestly lower casualty rates in the wars of Bush and Obama, all three could have flipped from red to blue and sent Hillary Clinton to the White House.
Yes, I saw that too. It's very interesting. It's, you know, once again, we see the We have not had good analysis of the election. It's very unfortunate. And this is a point of view that I was not aware of this. It's very interesting, though. The military is largely white and rural. It's interesting that they point this out, the large numbers of soldiers from states such as those. I think a lot of things... more things than we are told we need to think about played a part in those states flipping from blue to red. But I think there's, for a lot of reasons, dissatisfaction with the status quo, a need to see something new, The bloom was clearly off the rose with hope and change after two terms. People knew that wasn't the case. You know, the parts of Trump's appeal, we've heard a lot about the appeal of racism, of white nationalism. I'm not saying that was not there.
Right.
But I think there's some more nuance, too. So it's important that people that we start to hear points of view like that. It's interesting. It shows that and the fact is that Trump, his foreign policy views that he expressed during the campaign were antagonistic to those of the war party.
Right.
So people voted for him either not caring about that at all or embracing it. It's hard to say where, you know, many people will vote for someone who disagrees with them on some issue. So it's not easy to parse that out necessarily.
Right.
But the fact remains that he said he talked constantly about wanting better relations with Russia. He spoke against interventions. He did. There was some mixed messaging there. He did talk about confronting Iran and China. So you can't say he was the peace candidate. That's not true either. But it's clear that what we're told about Americans, especially white people in the places you just mentioned, all being members of the war party, it's clear that's not true.
Right.
Or at least it's not a big priority for them, that there are other issues that are greater priorities. So it's important that when people do have the opportunity to give us information like that, that they do so, because it gives us a point of view that the corporate media ignore.
You know, and my point for raising it, I agree completely. My point for raising it is that you're not going to see any coverage of this in our media. And so that relates back to, I mean, that is the model they use. So when we're talking about DPRK, North Korea, quote unquote, 60, I don't know, 5 years of that stuff now going on. And it only, of course, getting worse as the concentration of ownership intensified and all of the other trends that have happened since 1952, which, despite being in the midst of the McCarthy era, looks like liberal heaven compared to what we have now.
In our lifetimes, I mean, in my adult life, I've seen the worsening and the devolution of the media in this country and the points of view, or rather the limits on the points of view that are allowed to get a hearing in and possibly influence public opinion. I was a kid, but I still remember during the Vietnam War that there was a shift, and there were people in the corporate media who challenged the official narrative. Mm. We don't get that now at all.
At all.
If you look at it, the subject could be North Korea, the subject could be Russia, the reporters, the op-ed writers, the TV, the networks are all of one opinion. And you have to look, you have to, if it weren't for the internet, we wouldn't, it would be very difficult to get different points of view about domestic and international issues. So now we're told that a certain country is evil, they're a hostile nation, North Korea is evil, Russia is evil. You know, Donald Trump's stupid son meeting with some Russian hucksters is proof that Russia hacked the election. I mean, I could go on and on and on. It's hard to say this because Americans are so convinced that we have this free media when we do not.
You know, I was I'm thinking about just in the period since the Nixon administration. I turned 18 in 1972, so I've been an adult since Nixon was president, legally. And, you know, back then, Knievel was evil. You know, since then, Saddam Hussein is evil, and Libya, you know, well, Gaddafi's evil, and Putin is evil, and, you know, Knievel was evil back then. That was the big deal. You know, it's gotten a lot different. And literally, though, the concentration of ownership, I mean, let's say that today, if somebody found a YouTube of a person slowly pouring lime juice into their navel and it got, you know, a million hits, the news channels would all show it and offer an opinion about what you were looking at that would be identical, with the exception that on CNN and MSNBC, they would say, and oh, by the way, the Republicans are fascists. And on Fox, they would say, oh, by the way, the Democrats are commies. Otherwise, there'd be this picture of a guy pouring lime juice into his navel, and everybody has that covered as news and agree about the basic facts. That's the kind of unanimity we have, and also vacuousness in the media.
Yes, unanimity over vacuousness. Yes, after the recent G20 summit, there was this video went viral. Some Australian commentator who said that, among other things, Donald Trump looked lonely and awkward at the G20 summit. I mean, it was ridiculous, and this got a million hits.
I know,
and it was, and this video itself was, you know, the subject of talk. And he's not the leader of the free world. And can we get rid of that terminology that comes straight from the Cold War? I don't know what the free world is.
No one on this planet knows what that is, I don't think.
Exactly. It used to mean not communist, but there are so few socialist nations anymore. It doesn't even mean anything. Manufactured consent. It was, you know, the New York Times wrote about it, and other papers wrote about it, because some Australian guy said Donald Trump looked lonely and awkward and was not the leader of the free world anymore. And I mean, there were so many thoughts I had. I was like, well, does Australia need to be led? Isn't Australia an independent nation? Why do you care? And plus, Donald Trump ran on a platform of the United States changing its foreign policy.
Right.
So whatever it was this person meant, yes, that's true. He said there were no more trade deals. He said he wanted to change the relationship with Russia. So he's doing as he somewhat doing as he said he was going to do. But the fact that this drivel was embraced all over the world and millions of people were told that there was some great enlightenment coming from some silly mutterings about Donald Trump looking lonely and at a summit was just dreadful. It tells you how bad things are with the media.
And finally, the thing that really you wrote that they use words like isolated, rogue, and reclusive about North Korea and other places. And you say that means one thing. That particular state has run afoul of the American government because it dares to exist on its own terms. Trump, when he said during the campaign things like you mentioned, and this very important one, no more regime change, not only put those things out on the table and at the agenda, but this is something that I've been trying to communicate to people in some fullness, and I haven't really been able to do it. The response from the assembled Republicans when he said those things inside the arena at the convention, when he said no more regime change, people stood to their feet like they hadn't done for the first 20 or 30 minutes or whatever it was of this speech. This was a big affirmative point for supporters, at least the ones that were assembled at the convention. And I don't think people are taking that into consideration when they try to figure out what to do with him over foreign policy.
Yeah, it just goes to show you, I mean, it's what we were talking about before. The only people who belong to the war party are the politicians. And the public, whether Democrats or actually Democrats are more of the war party, having being so slavishly devoted to, you know, Obama and Hillary Clinton. But we don't know how people in this country really feel about America's interventions. And even when people back them, it's more like in order to be anti-Trump, you have to back a Democratic Party foreign policy.
Right.
Because Trump is a tool of the Russians, and you know, and they have held pact and they colluded and he's a traitor and so on and so forth. So things have been turned on their head a bit, and it's all part of the contradiction that we see in this country at this time.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the banner Freedom Rider. We've been discussing her column this week, Leave North Korea Alone. Margaret, thank you very much. Best of luck to you in everything you do.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.